whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. We talk about announcers, like play-by-play and color guys a lot on the show here because they affect your enjoyment of the game sometimes, mm-hmm. Awful Announcing, great website, been around for a long time, covers the broadcasting game. Every year they do a report card on the various announce crews for the NFL. And this year, there's more than ever because they go all the way to like ones that only did one game together.
Oh,
like
wow.
Like J.J. Watt and Nate Burleson and Ian Eagle got a report card, even though they only did one game together. So there's 25 announced teams on here that were voted on. There's 50,000 votes that were, or 50,000 grades that were put, that were cast by people. And just to give you an idea, the average grade, they do it on a scale of 1 to 5. The average grade is 2.43 of the top 25. Oh, that's the college one. So the grades hover for the whole grade, for the whole group of 25, the grades hover around the mid twos, which stands to reason. That's a C.
Yeah.
They've got 25 of them here, and I'm skimming. I'm not going to go through the whole top 25 because I don't know that people care about some of these announced teams. I'll stop at the ones that I think people do care about. And as I page down, starting at 25, I get to 22. Chris Rose and Ross Tucker, NFL Network. To my knowledge, I think they only did that one Patriots-Chargers game together.
Oh, so Ross can be in multiple appearances here.
Ross is here multiple times.
All right, so yeah, so some of this is simply going to be, the vast majority of the electorate didn't even see these partners together.
Fair, yeah.
You get enough exposure to a lot of the other guys that, yeah.
Said, despite this is, and they do, the Awful Announcing does a sort of a summary of each of these announced teams, kind of telling what the grades were. For them. And it says this, despite the relatively low grade, this booth drew a lot of praise in the comments that included everything from everyone loved this game, great duo, awesome, prepared, underrated, knowledgeable, should be permanent teammates.
Ooh.
Both Rose and Tucker drew individual praise for Ross, individual praise such as, I enjoy Ross's energy and knowledge of the game, and so funny. And Ross is funny, I think. Maybe he's not everybody's cup of tea. I don't know, but I think he's really funny.
You know what he is? He's jovial.
Yes.
It's not necessarily,
merry.
It's not like a Dennis Miller type comedian where you're like, I got to go read a history book to understand this joke. So he's just having fun.
Okay, now on the flip side, there were further lines of people preferring Rose in studio instead of play-by-play.
Uh-huh.
I would say that for Rich Eisen as well. And criticisms for Tucker. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Terrible.
Ah, what?
Annoying voice.
He's got a unique spend some voice. Time with him. He sounds drunk.
A little bit.
He's kind of like, that's what just, I think a lot of people, after you get to know him, you find it endearing.
Yeah.
He doesn't, not by virtue of what he's saying, but he's just kind of got like that, like, ah.
Comments came in more positive than you'd expect, even their overall grade.
Right,
again,
right.
Showing the divide between voters and voters who commented.
This is one of our goals as we become the best in the world, is to put Ross over, because then also we have an ally.
Yes.
If he becomes one of the top three teams, then we've got a voice out there.
Ross likes us a lot. So paging down, and oh, look, there's Ross Tucker again at 19.
Ooh, he's climbing.
The crew that called the Texans-Titans game on Sunday, Tom McCarthy, Jay Feely, Ross Tucker, who he's been paired up with multiple times. That's CBS is his much more regular gig than the NFL Network.
Jay Feely, his first year or two as a broadcaster, I did not like at all. But part of it was, I think they were trying to kind of pigeonhole him into talking about the special teams. And like, all right, there's only so much I really want to know about the special teams. So he's Jay Feely, you can tell, has done a lot of work on really learning the game and how to talk about the game in total.
So that I didn't realize this. So Ross Tucker is basically replaced James Lofton in that crew. So that was the James Lofton crew last year.
That's an upgrade. Because we used to get a lot of James Lofton. Very likable, but didn't always seem like he was really just checked in.
I'm a bigger Ross Tucker fan, So, how about this? Much of the praise here was for Ross Tucker for this crew. Some of that included Needs to be on every game. His energy is amazing.
Amazing energy, yes.
He has great energy. Truly a natural, exciting, knowledgeable, and just an all-around good time to watch and listen to.
Mm-hmm.
I can say that from experience, as can you. You and I both hung out with Ross socially before.
Yeah.
I watched the snow game with him on Thursday night, the Jameis Winston game.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun to watch with Ross Tucker.
Yeah, he is.
Because he was into that game.
Yeah, he is a large personality-ed individual.
Loves football.
I've been in restaurants with him where I'm kind of like, I'm just going to tamp it down a little bit, Ross. People are like, you're turning this thing into a radio show.
Yeah, but it's great. Most knowledgeable color guy, yet so underrated and underused. I learn something new every time I listen to Ross, and hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
McCarthy drew a lot of praise as well. A lot of the criticism for this crew was with Jay Feely.
Yeah.
With several saying they'd give a McCarthy-Tucker booth alone a higher grade.
Yeah, I think that's too. Like, sometimes with the three-man booths, it feels like the producers are almost just like, they feel like they need training wheels or something. And because it gets, if you've got a good duo, the third voice just makes things clunky.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ross Tucker and that crew is 19. The very next crew is Drew Carter, Mina Kimes, and Dan Orlovsky for the cartoon Simpson play-by-play that they did.
Ross just missed out.
I feel like Ross would have a great one-liner on that. Like, yeah.
You lost to Homer Simpson.
I finished behind a cartoon group that did a Simpsons game.
I'm basically Lisa Simpson. I'm the least desirable of the Simpsons.
Right, yeah. Right. I'm Maggie, the baby.
I like Maggie way better than Lisa.
I do too. Lisa's
can
annoying.
Get bent.
Lisa's nerd. Lisa's annoying. All right, so paging down other crews on this list that we may care about as I continue to page down. 17, don't care about them. 16, you got to go to another page for 15. Let me look at my rundown here because I've got it. At 14, how about this? 14th. Definitely the crew that's making the most money collectively. Because Tom Brady makes $37 million a year.
Yeah,
Kevin Burkhart and Tom Brady are 14th among all the play-by-play and color crews, among fans voting in
this thing. That's where I think we're getting into the territory where celebrity matters. And I do. I did not get to watch Tom Brady early in the season much at all on the TV broadcasts. I've watched him a couple times in the last few weeks, and I've liked him. I thought that I just enjoy. I think he's starting to do a good job of like when to kind of give insight into the X's and O's versus the human side of things.
Yeah.
But with Brady, what I always expected with him is like anybody that tries really hard at something, sometimes at the beginning, it doesn't sound as good as like a Tony Romo who's just going out there and letting it fly.
Yep.
I think it's going to be, if he continues with broadcasting, it's going to be a steady growth because he's probably maybe over-preparing in some respects and trying to figure out how to say just the right thing. But I enjoyed him.
What I wonder with Brady is the reports are that he's going to be very involved in this coaching hire for the Raiders. He owns part of the Raiders, for those who don't know. It's easy for him to operate with this dual life that he's got going on right now, being what looks to be an involved owner in a team, not a passive owner, and being one of the primary commentary voices on TV. It's easy to do that when the Raiders suck.
Yeah.
If the Raiders ever get good, I'll be interested to see how that whole thing gets handled.
Yeah, right now I could see like in those production meetings when a guy like Tom Brady is going to be, I think, asking a lot of really good questions about the football side of things and the strategy and everything.
Right.
Like when it's now and he's just kind of at an arm's length from the Raiders or was, and the Raiders aren't any good, guys aren't going to worry about it too much. But yeah, if they get good, they're probably going to start being more close to the best.
Yeah.
But never underestimate this. If all these coaches also want Tom Brady to think they're smart. You know, in the future, if Tom Brady has an opportunity to hire him, there's a self-promotional side to some of those production meetings.
I hadn't thought about that. That's good. I hadn't thought about that. 14th is really low, though, for the lead. Because just to contextualize that a little bit, the lead teams on each of the networks, for example, Nance and Romo are 6th, which I think CBS would probably feel like, okay, well, we'd rather they be 1. I mean, but Nance and Romo are 6th. Tirico and Collinsworth are 3. Buck and Aikman are 2. And again, for those listening, this is awful announcing rankings of all the NFL announced teams. This is the most interesting thing of this whole list. Joe Davis and Greg Olsen are number 1.
Yeah.
The number 2 team on Fox, the guy who Brady replaced, and I think Greg Olsen's, for people who care about this stuff, I think Greg Olsen is a very sympathetic figure.
Yeah.
He's, and clearly a lot of these fans care to some degree. I just, when I was paging down, and I'm getting to like all the number one teams that are all in the top five or six there, I'm like, dang, who is number one? I'm like, whoa, Joe Davis and Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
Clearly the people out there think is a much better, they're not, like, Burkhardt and Brady aren't even the best Fox team on this
list. The interesting part about this is that when it comes to dealing to a mass audience, the overall public is, like, not necessarily, they're not going to have the same tastes as a hardcore sports fan. Mm-hmm. And I think with Greg Olsen, Greg Olsen has enough personality, and obviously he's a big name. He's not as big a name as Brady, but I think that he does a really good job of, almost like in a less goofy way than John Madden did it, but like Greg Olsen can explain some of the concepts in layman's terms, and I think people really appreciate that.
Yeah.
But it's still like, okay, this website, it's awful announcing, which I know it's mostly a comedy type thing, but they're like hardcore sports fans.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the people watching on any given Sunday, it's also just the people that are only watching on Sunday.
Yeah.
And a lot of those people like hearing Tom Brady's name or seeing Tom Brady, or just feels like there's more cachet to it.
Yeah.
So I think like Brady's always going to have the upper hand in that regard.
Sure.
But as far as like maybe the connoisseurs of football watching, Greg Olsen has really grown on me, because early in the first year or two, it was, for me, part of it was just simply like he wasn't really speaking with a broadcasting voice, and I had a hard time hearing him.
Yeah.
And you know, people say, well, I gotta adjust the levels. Like, no, there's some of it that's just like, man, how forceful are you saying what you're saying? He grew into that part of it, and now it's like, yeah, I want to hear what Greg Olsen's opinion is on why this play broke down.
I just instantly like him when I listen to the games. Yeah. Like, you know, like he's got a really likable tone, he's got huge energy. And then you watch him break down a few plays, you're like, oh yeah, this guy knows what he's talking about too.
It's not huge over the top energy.
No, yeah. But it's the optimal. Yeah. It's a perfect amount of energy. For those wondering, real quick, Seth, the Ian Eagle, Nate Burleson, J.J. Watt trio that did the Steelers and Chiefs. I guess that would have been Steelers Chiefs Christmas Day, 10th out of 25. That's pretty good
after one showing. Yeah. I mean, it was a big one. A lot of people watched.
Right behind the Manning cast, which finished 9th.
Whole different category.
Yeah, I almost feel like that there should be like another voting for like alternate broadcast.
I've told you, like, for the Manning cast, I actually enjoy it if it were a podcast. I kind of like some of the conversations they get into and everything, but for watching the actual game, especially when they have the non-football people on, or even some of the football people, it's just they're not paying enough attention to the game for my in-game experience.
Yeah. You're doing pretty good today. You had a flight yesterday, man.
Oh, I didn't know. I had three flights, because one of the flights was delayed 4.5 hours.
That sounds awful.
Two of which I spent on the ground waiting for the plane to be fixed. And then
I'm impressed. Like, we're in the 9 o'clock hour. You did not get a lot of rest last night.
We deplaned. I won't go through the whole rigmarole. It was probably the worst travel day I've ever had that wasn't like involving a real bad disaster or something.
Yeah.
So to tidy it all up, we arrived to Houston, I believe, 4 hours and 45 minutes late. Okay. Landed at 12:30 p.m. a.m., excuse me, 12:30 a.m. And which was after a conversation I had with Sean T. Pendergast early in the morning, where I was debating whether or not I should check my luggage.
Mm.
I thought to myself, you know what? Yeah, I'm just going to check my carry-on. I'm just going to enjoy, you know, like walking around the airport unweighted and all that.
To be clear, you're normally not a baggage checker. I am, and I...
Well, I do it case by case. Okay. I put way more thought into it than I should. In this instance, I decided to check my carry-on bag.
Yeah.
It was like, hey, I had time. I was going to be getting in at like 8:30 p.m. or whenever it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get in 4.5 hours late. It's 12:30 a.m. We all just are haggard band of refugees make our way to the carousel.
You bond with people.
Yeah. And it's been a journey, man. It's been a journey. This same group of people has been on two different airplanes over the course of many, many hours.
Basically, it's an episode of Lost.
Yeah. I was the leader. And no, it wasn't. It wasn't like, we weren't that tight yet. This is where everybody got really tight.
Yeah.
So let me check my text to fact check myself. Yes, 1:15 a.m. I texted Brandy. Still at the luggage claim.
No way.
Still at the baggage claim.
No way.
And I'm kind of like, I'm trying to keep my, you know, just thinking of all my breathing exercises and everything. Like, hey, man, at the end of the day, this is no tragedy. I'm cool. I'm not going to get angry about this. What are you going to do? Sometimes this happens.
Sure.
I've had a pretty good run of like zero travel issues.
Right.
Every, you know, just everybody gets his comeuppance at some point. So at like 1:20 a.m., the carousel starts moving.
Okay.
It buzzes.
Dude, when you've been waiting for it that long and it happens.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Holy Grail. It felt like such a release. The first piece of luggage comes down the belt.
That's a beautiful sight.
Nice little mid-sized suitcase.
Yeah.
It drops on the carousel.
Yeah, it comes down that little ramp, yeah.
It makes it a quarter way around the carousel.
And?
The belt stops. We all just sat there looking at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we do? And they're all looking at me. I'm the leader. No, they weren't. But everybody's like, no, it can't be. It can't be. And it was.
How much longer did it?
We waited 10 more minutes. Everybody started, all of a sudden, with no announcement or anything, everybody starts like in a mass exodus going to another carousel.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, it's one of those situations where they just had the wrong announcement or something. I don't know. So like, I'm a herd member. I go along with a herd.
I'm never a leader at the baggage claim area, ever. I just go, oh, I see that guy was on my plane.
It was either, there was no other flight down there at that time. It was just us.
Yeah.
And they all, that was all because the Judas goat had gone over to check like the special claims or something. We all followed him. And the woman comes on, and I actually felt she did a good job of genuinely making feel bad for her having to announce it. Basically, the announcement, it was several announcements, and me with one of my fellow passengers who had a geotag on his bag.
Yeah, those are great.
After our app had told us that our bags had already been delivered to Carousel 12, he's looking at his geotag or his air tag, and he's like, well, it's, I don't know where this is in the airport, but it's definitely not this terminal.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. And the announcements are basically like, we're trying to find, not like, it wasn't, sir, I'm trying to find your bag. It was like, we're trying to find all the bags.
They lost all the bags at the same airport.
Yes. And that's when I lost it internally. That lady actually soothed me a little bit. It was after the one bag came down and the belt stopped.
Yeah.
I almost
the ultimate tease.
If there were a United employee around to actually talk to,
yeah,
I probably would have done something which I never do, which is lose it on an airline employee.
Yeah,
I'm the exact opposite in stressful situations.
Mm-hmm.
Most airline employees really want to help you, and if you're just nice to them, it's amazing how far they'll go. I lost it, and I tethered myself back in.
Wow,
but I've never had so many wrong things happen on a flight before in America.
That's crazy.
This is third world stuff. The number of different things. The only thing I can say is like, thank you, United, for not sending us up on the first airplane, which very well could have killed us because like the lights all went out and everything.
Oh, jeez.
But everything after that, oh my gosh. So I ended up getting, I came here. I was like, okay, I'm going to sleep. I'm just going to come straight to the studio. And sleep at the studio.
You're doing good today.
I got 2 hours of sleep, but I feel pretty good.
Yeah, you're doing good today.
Thanks, man.
Get some rest today, though. Man, pray for Seth, everybody. All right?
Oh, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I might never need sleep again. I'm going to make that mistake of having one good day on 2 hours of sleep and thinking, like, I basically don't need this.
The show is amazing.
I never realized it, but I'm superhuman.
That's right. Nick Caserio yesterday said something right out of the chute when we asked him about how we feeling about the team. That had very divergent opinions among the shows here on Sports Radio 610. We'll talk about that. You'll hear it coming up.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio was on the show yesterday. Good interview, good conversation. A lot of good feedback on that. You can get it on the podcast, Payne and Pendergast, on the Odyssey app. We asked Nick right out of the chute, what are the vibes? How are we feeling? How are we feeling about heading into the postseason? Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, definitely appreciative the opportunity. I think when you kind of turn the page and you get through the regular season to have your team in a position to compete, when you're playing meaningful football in December and January, it carries a certain weight along with it. So everybody's excited about the opportunity in front of us. We had a great sort of first day of preparation, first day of work. We were actually out there on a field yesterday practicing on a Tuesday, which isn't normal, but the fact that the game is Sunday, we've kind of structured the schedule. And what we've found is when we work, we play good football. So the players were focused. The players had the right mindset. And it's not easy because you come off the heels of a Sunday game and you got to kind of turn the page. But everybody understands what's in front of us and the awareness is heightened. And everybody's excited about the opportunity in front of us against a good Los Angeles team that's coming in here on Saturday.
So the relevant part of that I thought was interesting was he said when we work, you know, on these short weeks, we tend to play better. And I know they've kind of, you know, messed around with, like, what's their approach during a short week? Do you prioritize rest and recovery and load management, or do you get out there on the practice field? And it sounded to me, the way I was taking it was like, okay, there are, you know, some teams might in a short week, especially at the end of the season, say, all right, rest is paramount, so we'll do a walkthrough or something. It sounds like D'Amico and Caserio realize, like, no, we got to get out there and practice. These guys play better when they're out there getting practice.
In re-listening to him, we're going to play what Clint Sterner thought of this in just a second, because he took it, I think, in a different direction than we took it.
Yeah.
And then in a different direction in what I think Nick meant by stressing when we work, because he emphasized work. But in re-listening to it, and I didn't catch this the first time, but he said, we've structured the schedule.
Yeah.
And we found out that when I didn't hear the structure the schedule part. This sounds to me like exactly what you're talking about, Seth. It's like, hey, man, like we have to operate a certain. We find when we operate this way the week of a game, we play better on Sunday, or in this case, Saturday.
Yeah.
It's just a better version of the Texans. Now, there are people out there that may have heard it the same way that the guys in the afternoon specifically. I know Tyler confirms that he's heard it that way, and Clint as well. And I don't know if Ron was on board with that as well, based on this audio. I was listening at the time. I apologize, but I know Clint was so emphatic about it that that's the one I remember.
Yeah, we heard it. Clint and I heard it differently.
Yeah. Here's the drive yesterday.
You heard him there, Clint. He said when we work, damn it, we play well. What he said. Now, Clint's fingers are. If you can't probably see it, the camera that low on YouTube, but Clint's fingers are banging a little bit on the table, ever so slightly. What jumped out when you heard that part of the interview?
You tell me. You tell me when you hear general manager or head coach in week 19 of the season. We know when we work, we play well. We play good football. I'm sorry. When we work, we play good football. Tyler, you're a huge Texans fan. You cover a little closer than most folks, so I think there's a good straddle there of what do you hear right there? You tell me.
That tells me on the front end, and just so everybody knows, me and you haven't even talked about this, Clint, so I hope I'm right. But it tells me, hey, there's possibly been some weeks this season, this football season, where the proper work has not been put in. Is that what you're feeling?
Absolutely.
With it?
100%. Okay. When we work, we play good football. Yeah, like that the fact that we're at a spot where we, like, our good football is dependent on if and when we work, and we work hard, and we work detailed, and we work well. The fact that we're there 2 years in, really, it's obviously with Nick, it's 4 or 5 years, 4 years, I think. But with D'Amico and this team, we've won 20 ball games in 2 years, and here we sit, and we're talking about when we work, we play good football. Now,
okay, yeah. Okay. So this is where Clint and I differ. I think Clint took that as he heard it like what he said at the end. When we work hard, when we work detailed and work well, Clint's adding some adjectives there that put it on the players. I think on like the actual like, okay, are they actually working hard? I very much felt like, and the way I understood it, the way I felt about it at the moment was just that he's talking about the actual practice schedule.
Yes.
Because especially on short weeks, practices at the end of the season, that's a lot of time and energy goes into the head coaching job of like trying to figure out, all right, what's the pulse of this team? Does the team as a whole need rest? Or do we need to get out there and practice? And what tempo is the practice going to be? Are we going to be in shoulder pads for 9-on-7 or whatever it might be? That's how I took it. I did know in the moment that I felt like the way Nick had phrased it, that other people might take it the way Clint did.
Yeah.
But I just, and then we would go on to talk a little bit about load management, and that kind of buttressed my thoughts on what Nick was saying.
Yeah, I thought it clarified.
Yeah, that it's really a matter of just, and especially because he was talking about how do you approach a short week. We went out and we had a practice on a Tuesday instead of maybe a walkthrough or something like that. I don't put that on the players not working hard or paying attention to detail. I think that's more just like what every NFL coach is doing this time of year is like you got to make that really hard decision about preparation versus rest. And that what Nick has realized and Caser or what Nick and D'Amico and others have realized is like, okay, you know what? Like we just flat out when we get out there and practice, Yeah, it just might not be the safest thing injury wise and everything, but we play better in the game.
Yeah, I think too. Look who we're talking about here. We're talking about Nick Caserio has come on this show 50 times probably, right? Yeah. Like once a month for the last 4 years. And name a time where he has thrown a player or a coach under the bus in the way that construing that audio would have him doing.
Yeah,
would be implying that he's got a team of guys that don't work hard or don't put in the work or don't put in the necessary work in order to be a good football team.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that would be totally out of character for him to do, to come in and have that take on this show.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So
any truth to it or not, I don't think he would air that on a radio show.
Honestly, that's where I think so much of the challenge of coaching these days when you have so many resources available to you is learning, okay, like D'Amico embraces the sports science of things, but D'Amico also understands, yeah, there's still an old school football element to this, and just or like football or any other team, we're like, all right, if you want to get better as a team, you got to try to find that balance between, am I pushing them too hard? Do I need to back off? Like anybody who's in charge of large groups of people in the military know this, like very military officers actually know this better than football coaches do, mm-hmm. like the importance of R&R, but you got to try to balance it out and everything.
Yep.
A lot of football coaches are out there like pretending to be their movie version of a general without understanding like, all the stuff that generals understand. So I think it's interesting. And I think the part about it, just however, whatever opinion you had of that and whether you think Clint was more correct or like my hearing of it was more correct. It's a reminder to me that this is still a very young team in a lot of regards. You've got a lot of older vets there, but a lot of your key players, and including some of the older vets, are new to the team. So some of the young players are new to the league and new to the team.
MO's
a lot of the older
man.
Guys are new to this scheme, both offensively and defensively. And you got to find that balance of like, all right, you know what? There's some teams that are kind of well-oiled machines already. And if they got the right veteran rookie balance, you can go out there and have three-quarter speed practices or half-speed practices this time of year. The Texans aren't there yet.
No.
And it sounds like that's what D'Amico and Caserio have kind of realized as well. It's like, all right, yeah, like, yeah, sure, the GPS numbers don't look great as a whole, but the first and foremost, we gotta get the operation better. We got to be out there practicing.
Does it move anything for you with this game when you hear, like, they've clearly done the research and that when they operate this way, they just play much better, that they recognize that and they're operating that way for this game?
On a short week, right?
Because
that was the big part that you and I even ignored, too, is like that it's the short week dynamic, too.
Yeah, and they've been good on short weeks this year. They're 0-4. Right,
they're 0-4 in short weeks and with a loss to the Jets.
Yeah.
So, yes, it does because, you know, again, going back to the whole, okay, do they need rest or whatever? Like, they had a mini bye week before the Titans game. And then in the Titans game, a lot of their starters only played minimal reps and or, you know, just even like not a full slate of reps. I think energy wise and like trying to kind of vibe check them just through interviews and everything, it feels like they're pretty refreshed and they're physiologically capable of embracing the psychological message of, hey, new season, you know, like, hey, wash the taste of your mouth out of any of the things that we couldn't get accomplished. They're like, this is a clean slate. So, yeah, I do feel good about it.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll dig into the game deep tomorrow. Chargers, Texans. I'm getting excited for this over at NRG. Should be a great day. Great day for tailgating. Great day for football. And hopefully a great day for a Texans victory over the Los Angeles Chargers. Could it be going any more differently for the two rookies from last season's Rockets team right now? We'll explain. Have some audio for you coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, all the screen split tonight. We got college football playoff semifinal, 6:30. Rockets are in Memphis to take on the Grizzlies. I think I saw Ja Morant on the injury list, so we'll see if we get a look at Ja Morant when they play the Grizzlies tonight. Rockets still sitting, I believe, at the 2 seed. Sitting up there among the loveliest of the lovely teams. Everybody's on a different planet than OKC right now in the Western Conference. But the Rockets on that other planet, the Rockets rule the roost.
Yeah,
they're the OKC's got their own gigantic planet where they're by themselves, and then the Rockets rule everybody else right now.
I think the Texas game. I mean, Texas runs outside a lot. They have a lot of outside zone runs and whatnot. And Ohio State's run defense does a pretty good job of squelching that. So I think it very much becomes a Quinn Ewers game.
Yeah.
And just, all right, you know,
which
like,
would have me nervous.
They're going to put him on. Unless Texas can really get their outside zone working against that Buckeye defense, that'll kind of tell the tale of how the rest of the game goes.
Yeah.
If Texas comes off and pops off a couple of nice outside zone run zone runs early in the game, then it might predict good things for the sum total.
Yeah. Ohio State's just operating at a different level right now offensively. They got so many weapons, man.
It feels like Texas, in some respects, like they are a much better version of what the Texans would like to do.
Yeah. Just,
Texas has done a much better job of actually accomplishing it. But if you get that outside zone run game working, it does makes everything easier for everybody. And it just Ohio State is positioned to not allow that to happen. It's the big test. If they want to run that offense the way it can really be run.
I'm excited for tonight. I got a little Notre Dame Penn State action, and that'll be fun. My team has not been... They've been to this stage before when it was a four-team playoff. They've been in the semis a couple times, but never to the point where they've been a favorite in the semis for sure. Mm-hmm. They got blown out by Clemson a couple years ago. They got blown out by Alabama. They got blown out by Alabama in the national title game back when it was just the BCS and it was just two teams. So this is the first time I've ever felt like true hope that my team could win the whole thing. So we'll see what happens tonight. And then the Rockets in Memphis... I was watching yesterday some clips from a podcast that Joakim Noah and Zach Randolph were on together. Mm. Those are two interesting personalities.
I remember Joakim.
Yeah, those are two people that had some mercurial personalities back in the day.
When I say I remember Joakim Noah, it's more like, it's like, oh yeah, I remember, yeah boy, that was like
almost
like a cultural phenomenon in a weird way and everything. It just brings me back to a different era of
sports.
Man.
Yeah. Son of Yannick Noah, the tennis player. Yeah. Could it be going any more differently right now for the Rockets' two last season rookies? The guys they drafted last year, they drafted Amen Thompson with the fourth pick, and then Cam Whitmore slides all the way to the 20th pick. There were people thinking that the Rockets should have taken Cam Whitmore with the fourth pick. He was viewed as a top five player who slid. This is Joakim Noah and Zach Randolph talking about Amen Thompson.
Man, I watched Houston play the other day. I saw this kid, Thompson.
Thompson.
Oh, my goodness.
He's twins.
He locked his up, too. He's a beast.
He's a bad motherfucker, man. Amen Thompson. He's my favorite player right now. I'm watching his.
I like what Emay doing over there as a whole. He got them young guns. Young boys going.
Emay.
Them young boys going. No bullshit. Shout out to my boy Emay, man. Portland. Yeah. Portland finest, man. Yeah.
That was Zach Randolph there. Yeah. He was the last voice there.
I'm trying to remember with Cam Hayward, too, is he 20? How old is he? He's
Cam,
young.
Cam Whitmore.
Did I say Hayward again?
You did, yeah.
What a weird duo to get confused.
The same first name. I mean, you're halfway there.
Yeah, but I was like, Cam Newton would make more sense, at least, like than a 290-pound defensive lineman. I think with Cam Whitmore, I just try to keep remembering, like, you know what? He's young. And just like with Jalen Green, who just, lo and behold, Jalen Green's starting to look like a guy who at the ripe old age of being in his early 20s is starting to mature a little bit and become a more complete player. I try to remember that with Cam Whitmore. The part about Amen Thompson, I mean, it's just, that might be the biggest and best indicator of just Udoka and the way as good head coaches do, they can have their team take on their personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you add into it the fact that they are as young as they are with so many of those guys, Amen Thompson is just the right kind of beloved player.
He's clearly, I mean, they've already made a commitment to Jalen Green, not a massive one, 3 years. I mean, it's a lot of money, $30 million a year. They made a bigger...
Tradable.
Yeah, after the season, they can trade him. They signed Şengün to a five-year deal. That's a much bigger commitment. I feel like Şengün is not somebody they're moving off of. Jalen Green, I think, is somebody they can move off of in the right deal. Of the other guys, the other highly drafted guys, because there's been two every year for that three-year period, Jabari Smith, Tari Eason, Amen Thompson, and Cam Whitmore. Amen is clearly the guy out of those four that at some point is going to get another big deal. Like, there's so much that he brings to the team. I think they feel the same way, too, about Tari Eason. He just can't stay healthy.
Yeah.
He's just not on the floor enough. But Amen Thompson, man, that's really cool, like, for the Rockets to start hearing guys that, like, around the league or former players that are like, hey, man, I was watching these Rockets. Like, That's a pretty fun team to watch.
Right.
You know, it's Amen Thompson. I'm into this Amen Thompson.
It's
right
weird.
Here.
You know what? Which is, it's in stark contrast to the last time the Rockets were a really good basketball team. Yeah, all the old heads from the NBA would just complain and complain and complain about what a hard watch they were.
Yeah.
Just like all the stoppages, everything. Like everything that comes with, everything that would come with James Harden's play and the style of offense and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would swap maybe out a little bit of shooting ability with those old teams to
shot the ball better, for sure.
They could. Yes. Now, they weren't as good as... They were never as good at three-point shooting as you'd like them to be given the volume, but they were a much better shooting team than mm-hmm. this, one of the worst shooting teams in the league.
Yep. Yeah. Let's squeeze this in here. This was in our – we did an impromptu pettycast a little earlier in the 8 o'clock hour. We didn't get to this one, but anytime Charles Barkley goes off on LeBron James, I'm here for it. I like listening to it. Here's Charles Barkley just saying he hates the Lakers on the studio show the other night.
Why I hate the Lakers?
What?
Why?
Why do you hate the Lakers? Chuck, tell us.
Why I hate the Lakers, it's always somebody else's fault. Remember 3 years ago, it was Russell Westbrook's fault. Then it was Frank Vogel's fault. Then it was D'Angelo Russell's fault. Then it was Darvin Ham's fault. It's always somebody else's fault. The Lakers have, they don't have, listen, LeBron is one of the all-time greats. AD is a hell of a player. That's it. The rest of the guys are just guys. Every team got those guys. And it bothers me. Listen, you don't always blame other people for your shortcomings.
The nice thing about Barkley is a lot of times commentators will be accused of hating teams, and the commentators will defend themselves and say, no, I talk this way about every day. Barkley just comes right
I
out
hate
with
you.
It. I hate him.
Yes.
Hey, Barkley hates the Lakers. He's like, yeah, did you listen to what I just said? I hate them.
I like how he says, like, he talked, there was more audio, I don't know if it was from the same studio show or a different one, where he's like, talks about the Lakers suck. And I'm looking, I'm like, well, I mean, I guess for a team that has LeBron on it,
they're the sixth seed right now.
Yeah, they're 20 and 16.
He's 40 years old.
It is kind of cool. Like, I do like the fact that the NBA, which for a while, and the Rockets were guilty of this, like under Daryl Morey, they just went star hunting all the time.
Yeah.
And the Sixers did the same, have done the same thing with Daryl Morey there as well, like going and getting Paul George. They tried to do it with James Harden. I like that, at least in the West, that the teams that are killing it in the West right now are Oklahoma City. They're on the other end of one of those trades.
Yeah.
Like, they traded Paul George and got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who might be the MVP of the league, and basically all of the Clippers picks from now until Rapture. The Rockets, which are an organically drafted and grown team. Memphis, organically drafted John Morant, like young guy. Denver, you know, they drafted Jokic and Murray. And, you know, and I'm not saying that guy, like, those teams didn't go out and get some veterans to add to them, but they didn't go star chasing and try to create, like, teams that went star chasing. The Lakers, they're sixth. The Clippers went star chasing, they're seventh, and the stars all left. Phoenix. Like, Phoenix is ready to have a garage sale at some point.
I think the problem with the Lakers, too, it's just one of the... It's kind of like with the Cowboys where... And again, the Lakers are doing better than the Cowboys are or have been.
Yeah.
Obviously. But there's that element to where, like, you're almost... You can't get out of the way of your own mystique. I know it's easy to blame LeBron for wanting to bring the stars in, or his buddies as of old in previous years. But... It's also, I think, the organization in its entirety, like, you're a little too enamored of your past
mm-hmm.
and almost operating like you still feel like, oh, yeah, we're the Lakers.
We show up
and this is what happens.
Yep.
I mean, going all the way back to when they had their first go around with signing all the big old names in, what, 2015 or so.
Well, they did it. I know they did it with Kobe and Shaq. They added Gary Payton and Karl Malone back in the day.
Yeah, but.
That was the early 2000s. That didn't work.
No, right. But the more recent iteration was 2015, 16, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you. Look who's here. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula. Gentlemen, how we doing?
Howdy. I'm doing great.
What's the appropriate level of nervous I should be for the college football playoff semifinal tonight?
None.
As someone who's invested in Notre Dame football like me.
I am.
Me emotionally and you financially.
Yes. Look,
how nervous
when
are
it's
you?
My squad,
yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Let her rip?
Yeah, no, I'm always a little nervous.
Okay.
I'm always a lot nervous sometimes.
Are you like McClain in that once the playoffs begin, hey, any team from Texas is now you're a Longhorn?
That's the worst.
Yeah.
the geographical or even the SEC?
And John knows that's how I feel about it.
Well, he knows that's how I feel, and I also feel like that's BS.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're an Aggie. I mean, that's a whole different level and era.
I fall into the category of teams that I just start to like. Like, I've liked the Longhorns all year, which is kind of blasphemous, but yeah. I like the way they play. I like their squad. I like their talent. I think Ohio State's going to get them, but it wouldn't kill me. I mean, you know.
Yeah. That's
Ohio State. Yeah, there's going to be a part of you that's like,
How about that?
Take that. Yeah. Okay, what if it's like TCU or somebody that you don't have an in?
I'm not like, oh, as long as Texas, a team from Texas, I don't care. I want to see the best odds.
I don't get that, man. Yeah. I don't get that at all.
They're not deep enough in, because that means they're not on like message boards or going back and forth with fans of other teams and they need ammo.
Right.
Like, I feel like that's when you need it. You're like, no, I need you to lose so I can come back around to, you know, TCU guy 475 and throw it in his face, you know?
Can I just tell you guys, I really enjoyed the mixtape yesterday.
That was good,
on your show.
Me too. Yeah.
It was really good. I mean, well, Figgy, I mean, that was a magnum opus that he went in on that Morocco cat.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that was amazing. Like, all the audio he went back and got. That's a Morocco Seth is a very obnoxious Titans fan that has, what, like,
also
a podcast?
Also a country.
Any what?
A country.
Dumb joke. Don't worry about it. Keep going.
Oh, it is? Oh, Morocco, yeah.
He's kind of like a Larian Stafford.
For the time, yeah. I think even the two of them kind of went back and forth a little bit. But boy, Figgy pronounced him dead yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And he sounded dead.
Funeral for him. Mm-hmm. He did. Mm-hmm. Sounded like his heart had been ripped out. But then you guys took that topic. We actually had talked about that Breaking Bad house on our show a couple days ago. But I like the direction you guys took it, which is name the fictional house that you would most want to live in, whether the Breaking Bad house that's up for sale. You guys got some good answers in there. Mine was the Sopranos. I texted you guys. Mine was the Sopranos. I heard Reggie bring up the point I'd have to live in New Jersey, but North Jersey is very, very nice. It's very nice, you know.
I'd probably go to like any of those, a lot of those homes out in LA where like it's like on a or not in California.
Stilts?
Where it's not on stilts. No, I don't ever want to live on stilts. Those someone's terrifying me with all those slides and everything.
Lethal Weapon 2 scared me.
It's like on the top of a when it's on the top of a like a mountain, you know, high up on a mountain, but on flat ground part of the mountain, overlooking the ocean or something.
Yeah,
there's always you know what? What was the one about the Frost Nixon movie?
Frost Nixon.
Remember the movie about the guy who interviewed Nixon and kind of got him to confess?
Oh, yes.
But like Nixon was living in California at the time, and I remember that movie. Houses? They kind of show him on the phone, like overlooking the ocean. And everything.
No, thank you.
I want to live in Nixon's fictitious house.
Yeah,
that's what I.
You don't worry about the call of the void. You don't worry about the call of the void that just one day you'll jump.
Then I'll jump. No, I don't want it to be like a cliff.
Okay,
I want it to be with a view that overlooks the ocean.
I'm also thinking about somebody was like the Iron Man house, the Malibu house that he had. Yeah. Just like
No. I don't need anything like that. I don't want it to be like any kind of precariousness to it. I want it to be on flat ground, but with a view overlooking the ocean.
I believe I said the Only Murders in the Building house.
Yeah, that was
apartment. I love that.
The apartment up there. Yeah, but without the secret passageways.
With the secret passageways. Absolutely. Old school, I went to Animal House.
I love that house. For those of you who don't watch the Only Murders in the Building, there's like secret passageways behind that, which I cannot detach myself enough from. I can't suspend disbelief. It's like, okay, this building's been there for a century, and none of the inhabitants know that there's like a thin layer of plaster separating them from a secret network of tunnels.
That
bothers me a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, we found out that, like, in, what was it, in somewhere in New York, that there was just, like, tunnels that people had no idea about for a long time.
Oh, those old subway tunnels? Mm-hmm.
No, that people were, like, digging tunnels.
Oh, digging tunnels? Yeah.
It was like a Jewish community there. Like, I say it because that was actually a thing that was there. There's, you know.
Living underground?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so, like, it's a lot more plausible. It's one of those things that you would think
Google
is impossible,
machine.
But it's actually there.
Real quick. In my little town that I grew up in, population, I don't know, 1,000 or 2,000 people or whatever, there was this old house next to a bank forever. And it's kind of getting dilapidated and disrepair. Finally, somebody bought it, and they were going to tear it down. When they tore it down, they discovered a tunnel that somebody had dug from the house
I love stuff like that.
Up to the actual vault of the bank, And then apparently it was like it just dead-ended at a steel wall or something.
Oh, my God.
So they never pulled it off.
They never thought about trying to get like into the wall. They were like, I'll get there. We'll figure it out.
It was proof of concept, They just wanted to...
That's like a bizarro Shawshank situation. I'm going to dig a tunnel to try to get into prison.
It was weird. Well, it was weird
Spoiler alert, Inside Man.
Yeah, obviously, I think like whoever had the idea, it was probably somebody that kind of like, we should see if we can. And then they got to a steel wall and they're like, that's too much.
Excavation is what I do.
It really makes me question what it was all for.
I'm going to go back to law school.
By the way, I appreciate that today I got a Richard Feynman drop in. I studied him in the middle school, and so I was not expecting to hear that on the morning talk radio.
Oh, really? That's what sports radio does in this town.
Yeah, baby.
We're all about the physicists.
Nobel Prize winning physicists.
That's right.
Yep.
Especially if they play the bongos.
It was a football story.
It was.
Yeah.
We got there.
It actually was a football story. We got there eventually.
Miraculously.
It was genuinely a football story that involved Richard Feynman.
Indeed.
He was a horrible quarterback. It's a
You would think he would understand the projectile
angles.
Very few physicists make it as pro ball players.
I understood gravity better than anybody. He sailed every ball. It was amazing. All right, gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Thank you.
Seth, antibodies to
antibodies
you,
antibodies and a three-hour nap to me.
Yeah, go All get right. some sleep, brother. Get some sleep. All right, we're done.
I'll try not to take that personally.
We're done. We're out of time.
Actually, it's four, Seth.
I used the first hour of your show to get me into the sleepy mode.
Fair enough.
Touche. Operating on very little sleep. That's what I meant.